This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. This is Allegro Non Troppo, a broadcasting across Australia on the Community Radio Satellite Network, presented by Adam Stobbs and Peter Forte. Living in a democracy in Australia means that anyone can form a political party. Currently, there are around 28 registered political parties in Australia. Many of these are small and may support a single ideology.
Some of the lesser-known Australian political parties include the Fishing Party, the What Women Want Party and the Australian Sex Party.
Sometimes minor parties can end up holding the balance of power. So while it might not be hard to take some of them seriously, it's our democratic duty to be aware of who we are voting for.
Fiona Patton, a representative of the Australian Sex Party, is contesting the seat of Higgins in Victoria, which was recently vacated by the former Federal Treasurer Peter Costello. The ASP has around 2,000 members.
Today we'll find out more about them. Are they for real? Why do they exist? What do they hope to achieve? Fiona Patton is our guest today on Allegro Non Troppo. Welcome, Fiona.
Thank you very much.
Now, Fiona, you have been warned about me, I heard.
Oh.
Okay, because I'm going to take a little bit of a devil's advocate role in this particular interview. And rather than saying, yes, you're fabulous, you're great, I actually really want to find out what makes you tick. Mm. Tell us about the Australian Sex Party. Why the Australian Sex Party?
Look, we were formed, we made the decision to establish ourselves about exactly a year ago. We were fully registered with the Electoral Commission in August, so we're still a bit of a baby in the process. But it really was, I've been working for 20 years as a political lobbyist, and I just was finding that while the community was becoming more progressive, our politicians were going in the opposite direction. And we just really felt that we needed to have a voice in Parliament rather than trying to very hard lobby from outside Parliament with little success.
You could have been Freedom for Australia Party. Why the Australian Sex Party? Why did you choose the word sex? You just wanted to get your name noticed, didn't you?
Well, yes,
it
actually.
Helps,
yeah, that's right. You know, it was Don Chipp was a very good friend of mine and also a mentor, and he was encouraging us in this process. And he said, the one problem for new parties is getting noticed. So we thought the sex party probably is going to get noticed.
But if you've got the name sex in your title, then somewhere in your policies there has to be something to do with sex. Presumably.
And there is.
Well, this was an interesting thing. When we went through the Electoral Commission process, through the registration process, they actually had to make a ruling as to whether our name was obscene or not, because there had been objections to us. And really, I mean, when you think that the word sex can still be considered obscene in 2009, that shows the need for a sex party. And then when you look at our policies, the Electoral Commission said, well, what else could they call themselves?
Now, this is a fairly interesting, and it's a very important point to make here, that you chose the name the Australian Sex Party so people would know who you are and would remember it, right?
Correct, yeah. As well as the fact that our policies are around sex.
Sexuality.
That's right. Okay. Gender.
When this station is called Joy, but it's some time ago, we were looking, perhaps maybe we should change the name of the station. And they said, you know, call it Gay FM. And I mean, that sort of sounds really quite lame to call it Gay FM. But somebody said, if you want people to remember it, call it Fag FM. If you call it Fag FM, everybody will remember it. And so I sort of take your point of the Australian Sex Party. If you use a contentious name,
yep.
Okay, then people will remember it.
So exactly. Look, when we were established, I mean, I think, you know, What Women Want is a good example. When they were established, they might have got a little bit of press. They've been around for about 3 years now, but certainly I think, you know, the Australian Sex Party made national news when we launched.
Well, I have to confess, What Women Want Party, I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, they contested the Senate in 2007.
If the listener would like a little bit more information about what we're talking about, I've done a comprehensive set of notes, and they're available on the Allegro website, allegro.org.au, and I've also included a list of the 28 registered current register of Australian political parties. Now, the main parties, of course, are up there, but then you have parties like the Australian Fishing and Lifestyle Party, the Shooters and Fishers Party, the Fishing Party, What Women Want, Pauline's United Australia Party, and then there's the Non-Custodial Parents Party, Nuclear Disarmament Party. Now, the NDP actually sort of morphed, I think, to become the Greens eventually, didn't they?
Yeah, I actually think it might have been a hostile takeover. The Greens infiltrated and took them over.
And then you've got the Christian Democratic Party, which is the Fred Nile group, the Climate Change Coalition, the Communist Alliance. There's a lot of parties, and the Australian Sex Party is just yet another one of these. So tell us about, we know the name of the party, and in a little while later in the show we're going to actually scrutinise and examine your policies, and we'll go through them in a bit of detail. But the other thing I want to know about the Australian Sex Party, Fiona Patten, who is the Australian Sex Party?
We are a child of the Eros Association. So we were born out of Eros, which is the Adult Industries Association. So we were a national industry group. And it came out of adult retailers and adult online businesses who said, right, we need a voice in Parliament. Let's start a party. But since then, I mean, the people that have joined the party, as you mentioned, we now have 2,000 members, which I understand for a new party is quite
considerable.
Quite considerable. And it's from a really broad range of people. I would say we've probably got a large younger membership, so people sort of under 35. Which I call young.
What's interesting, I was going to ask to profile your members. So they're young, under 35.
Under 35, almost equal male, female. Mm-hmm. We're at all of the sexpos around the country, so we get a lot of interest there. I think we've had quite a lot of interest from gay and lesbian community. And yes, it's a very broad range of people. But as I say, we were born out of the adult industry, but we're a lot freer than a lobby group or an industry group. We can address a whole range of policies, as you can see from our list.
Do you also? I noticed reading through there's a lot of the sex workers are part of your political party. Is that correct?
Yes, well, that's my background. I came from sex worker rights organisations over 20 years ago. So I think there's a natural affinity and a natural alliance with that sector of the community and of our industry.
This is fairly in your face politics, isn't it? Really, a lot of people will find this confronting. The fact that we have an Australian Sex Party, which comprises mainly of under 2,000 people, most of them under 35, 50% male and female, gay and lesbian people, and it's headed by an ex-prostitute.
I know. Well, at least it's not a mad muck.
Do you take yourself seriously in this?
Yeah, absolutely, totally seriously. I think I've been doing community attitude polling for the last 15, 20 years, and I think that the vast majority of Australians do not support the position of the vast majority of politicians. So I think there is a place for us. And when you see people like Steve Fielding, quite often holding the balance of power, or prior to him, Senator Harradine holding balance of power, and then, people like Kevin Rudd, who is a very strong Christian and who has very conservative views on sex and sexuality, I think there is a definite need for a group like ourselves.
Now, one of your policies, it's actually the last policy on your page, but you've just mentioned something there, and I think I might go to that because this is really quite interesting. You want to end the tax-exempt status for religions. Okay, so are you anti-religion, Fiona Patten?
No, not at all.
Well, what are you anti? Why do you want to take away the tax-exempt status for religions when religious institutions do so much good for the wider Australian community?
I do not want to take tax-exempt from charities and from people who do good. What I oppose is the fact that it is tax-exempt to promote religion. Now, I'm all for, tax-exempt status for anyone who's doing good and putting that money back into the community. But, you know, I actually think that religion has a bit to answer for, and I'm not sure in the 21st century, you know, promoting a religion is for the national good.
Is the Australian tax, a six-party tax exempt?
No.
No, so you pay tax.
Yep.
And so you think that religion should pay tax as well?
I think they should for promoting religion, not for, you know, when you think of Hillsong has a record studio, Sanitarium makes, you know, Weet-Bix and the whole range of things, and they're all based back to religious churches.
There's a lot of big businesses.
A lot of big business. And I think they need to, you know, I think they should be paying tax like the rest of us.
Okay, that will not get you a lot of votes.
No, someone said to me, one of our sort of liberal insiders said, well, in the words of Sir Humphrey, very brave, Miss Patton. <Yes.
laughs> Fiona Patton, looking at the fact that we live in a secular community, a secular society in Australia, even so, a lot of people do have religious beliefs, and it's an important part of their lives. Okay, now you're fairly anti, from what I've read, you're fairly anti-religion.
You know, I'm not. I actually spoke at a synagogue yesterday and was at a church the week before. I have absolute respect for religion, and I have, you know, and if people want to believe in spaceships or whatever they want to believe in, I welcome that and endorse that, as long as they let me believe in what I believe in. And I think that's where we have the problem, that quite often, for example, you want to set up an adult shop in, you know, in a suburb somewhere in Australia, the first objection comes from the local church, saying that it will increase child sexual assault in the community, women will be raped and the horses will be scared.
And there's no evidence to support that.
Absolutely none.
I know that because I've been involved in that sort of situation.
Yeah. Well, I've heard similar arguments when people wanted to legalise homosexuality.
Well, exactly. I mean, did you hear Steve Fielding on the weekend? You know, he said, a man can't marry his brother and a woman can't marry her sister.
Most men wouldn't want to marry
No,
brother,
and what though. Has that got to do with anything? They, you know, they use religion to, you know, to push their positions.
I think he was speaking metaphorically, though, do admit. All men are brothers, all
but
women
he's
are
using a ridiculous metaphor.
Yeah, yes,
but it doesn't hold up.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think religion is used to push one position and to push it onto the vast part of the community.
Okay, let's explore this issue because it's really important and it has impacted on our social climate quite a lot in the last few years. What is the position of religion in politics? Because we have had several politicians come out and make fairly bland statements and even try to force through legislation or block legislation based on their religious beliefs.
Exactly. So you think now, nine... Sorry,
we have to be really careful here because we're dealing in... We're dealing in imperatives and we're dealing in universal imperatives.
That's right. I think we, as you say, we are a secular society. The last figures were about 9% of Australians are regular churchgoers. Now, 40% of politicians in federal parliament attest to being regular churchgoers and attend the weekly Christian fellowship prayer meetings that are overseen by Kevin Rudd. Kevin Rudd recently gave the keynote address to the Australian Christian Lobby's National Conference. That was last weekend. Now, the Christian Lobby is a very strong lobby organisation. Anti-gay marriage, pro-internet filter, pretty much everything that we are for, they are opposed to. And they have Kevin Rudd speaking at their national conference. So I think there is an undue influence from these organisations on politics today.
The one that really outraged me was the abortion pill RU486 when Tony Abbott tried to block that, saying his Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
And then I spoke with this with Professor Dennis Altman from La Trobe University when we had him on the show.
Hero.
And he said, look, it's the total sum of our experiences in our lives that get us to make these decisions. Mm. And if that total sum of experience includes our religious persuasion, then so be it.
Yeah.
It's fairly okay, because I was outraged to think that he would use his religion. But he said, look, it's probably fairly reasonable that they do include this because it's part of their life and experiences. Kevin Rudd, when he's going on, you can see this Christian thing, and you can see the fact that the government, the federal government, has got this stand against gay marriage.
Yes.
You know, Ursula Stevens coming out making statements about it and things like that and supporting this. It's only between men and women.
Look, I think it's all very well for them to have their religious views and their religious positions. And we do have that sort of, you know, you can vote on conscience on some issues. However, they are the representatives of the Australian public. They were elected to represent Australians and they should be doing that. So they should be saying, actually, the community is overwhelmingly in support of gay marriage, for example. So why would we be opposing it? We should be doing what the community who elected us are asking for.
It depends which part of the communities you ask and how you interpret the data.
Well, that's right.
Really, doesn't it?
Look, I mean, I used to get an interesting thing when I was, you know, lobbying state and federal. You would speak to a politician about a certain issue and they'd say, Fiona, I totally agree with you. You know, the law is mad. It should be changed. However, I hold this seat by 6% and there's an evangelical church down the road. Now, if I support you, they will oppose me and I may not get re-elected. So, sorry, I'm going to just have to keep my mouth shut. And this happens time and time again.
And it's really interesting because as we see the political divide actually narrowing between right and left,
right.
You can see now that the major parties, including the Greens, are all sort of getting centre. They're not so left, so right. It's becoming really interesting. You can see the federal seat of Melbourne, where we are at the moment, held by Lindsay Tanner.
Yes.
I know that he's a bit scared because the Greens are catching up to him.
Yeah.
In the state seat of Melbourne here, Pauline, Bronwyn Pike holds that seat by 1%.
I know. I mean, the Greens nearly took it from her.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was only by several hundred votes.
That's right. Richard Di Natale was a very close contest. And I wonder if this is why the Greens are having people like Clive Hamilton now, who I would say is quite right wing on a lot of his social issues, and people like Kathleen Molzine, who's one of the Greens candidates for the state parliament, again fairly, I'd say right wing in their.
You know what it is, Fiona? I reckon they're covering all bases so they can harvest preferences.
Look, I agree, and I think they're a big organisation now. You know, they have been successful. They are a huge organisation now, so I think that's right. They have to become more and more central. You know, so they won't have drug policies like they used to 10 years ago.
Mm. A special guest on Allegro Non Troppo today is Fiona Patten from the Australian Sex Party. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the upcoming by-elections on the 5th of December across Australia, where the Australian Sex Party has fielded candidates. This is Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter.
Allegro Non Troppo is produced at radio station 3JOY and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Thank the Foundation for ongoing support of Allegro Non Troppo. Our special guest on Allegro Non Troppo today is Fiona Patten from the Australian Sex Party. We've been talking to Fiona Patten about the existence and the reason why we have an Australian Sex Party. Now what we're going to do is we're going to examine some of the statements coming up leading to the by-elections, which are going to be held on the 5th of December, and then we'll analyse some of the policies. I love doing this, Fiona Patten, putting you under the microscope.
No.
Good.
The by-election for the federal seat of Higgins, vacated by former Treasurer Peter Costello, will be held this December, the 5th of December this year. The Sex Party candidate is Fiona Patten, who's drawn number 2 on the ballot paper. Ms. Patten is also the convener of the party and has had 20 years' experience as a lobbyist and industry association CEO around the federal parliament. I've had more experience representing people around the Parliament in Canberra than most candidates for a House of Reps seats have had, she said. Representing the people of Higgins would be a challenge, but I'd hit the ground running.
She has rejected Peter Costello's cringe-making videos that he made for Catch the Fire Ministries and which are still being promoted by this extremist religious sect on its website. Kevin Rudd, Peter Costello and many others have publicly stated that their religion guides them in their political decision-making. That's fine if it comes down to help thy neighbour and to do unto others. But the problem is that religion has become a secret partner with both Liberal and Labour parties in ordering up Australia's morality laws, and this is not in line with the community opinion, says Fiona Patten. Fiona Patten, is that really so?
Yeah, I believe it is. I certainly believe it is. I don't think we would be even still discussing something like a mandatory internet filter if it wasn't for groups like the Australian Christian Lobby. And you have to remember, I mean, at the last election, who, you know, where were they launching election campaigns? But at the Hillsong Church or online with the Australian Christian Lobby groups. And that was Kevin Rudd and John Howard. And I certainly think that they are having an undue influence.
Even so, you have to admit, Australia has a fairly liberal approach to most things. We're not executing gay and lesbian people. We're not outlawing things. We've just decriminalised abortion in Australia last year.
In Victoria.
We're seeing changes coming to things like surrogacy law. Mm. We're moving down a path of enlightenment. Do we need the sex party to push us faster, really?
I think we do. I mean, we are moving down there, but we're still a long way back in the field. Australia has more censorship than any other country, even New Zealand.
All right, let me say this. Having spoken to you for the last half hour, read what you've written, I think you're a very reasonable person, and yes, you do have the nouns to be a politician. You are aware of the issues and the people around you, but the Bradfield New South Wales by-election will be held on the 5th of December. The Sex Party's candidate is 26-year-old human rights lawyer, an Australian pole dancing champion, Marianne Leishman, also known as Zara Stardust. Miss Stardust is a strong Generation Y woman who believes in changing the world from upside down and using the stage as a space to talk about social injustice. She is also a feminist writer who also works as a trapeze artist, burlesque performer, showgirl, fire twirler, and pole dance instructor. Now, after reading that, it's really hard to take political aspirations seriously. Talk to us about this.
She is amazing. She has worked for the UN. She has worked for a number of Aboriginal community organisations. She has worked for women's organisations on sexual violence, on women's violence. She has worked in Timor. She has worked in Africa. She has worked in the Kimberley. She is a phenomenal person. I'm quite in awe of her. She has great social credentials in that way. She's incredibly progressive. She has I'm sure she doesn't mind me saying, I mean, she's a very happy lesbian that happens to be a pole dancer. She's a great performer.
Probably would have got more credibility if you'd left all that off. Just a bit of advice. You would have thought that. Why did you put it in?
You know, it was the photo that ran in The Age, The Sydney Morning Herald, The Australian, The Sun Herald, The Herald Sun, the Daily Telegraph, was a picture of Zara on a trapeze. Had we said 26-year-old human rights lawyer and put her in a suit, that wouldn't have got picked up. She is really well known in Bradfield, and there's a lot of middle-aged men in Bradfield who've got a little bit of a crush on her.
That's very smart, actually. I can see the logic behind why you did it, because it's a bit like calling your party the sex party. You've used something that's going to grab attention.
And I think she'd be brilliant. And I think she would be a brilliant candidate. And I can think of nothing better than having a 26-year-old young woman who is as earnest as she is Parliament.
But it also begs the question, why shouldn't someone who is a trapeze artist, a burlesque performer, showgirl, fire twirler and pole dancer, why shouldn't she be taken seriously as well?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Peter.
I can tell you exactly why, because usually people who do that as their living really don't have a lot of education and political issues.
But that's an assumption.
That's right. I mean, there are a number of very bright performers, and, you know, if she'd been a Shakespeare actor, we would have said, you can take her seriously. But because she's a burlesque performer...
Did anybody see that? So there was an item in, I think it was The Age, where they had Hollywood stars, and there were those who were really intelligent, brainy, and others who weren't. And some of the most beautiful, glamorous, pretty people were pretty dumb. So, I mean, you can't always judge a book by its colour, can you?
Well, when you look at its celebs who become politicians and look at those who want to be politicians, it's quite... it does work.
Well, I mean, Ronald Reagan, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I mean, you'd think, he was just a muscle-bound dumbhead, people thought he was, until he went into politics.
And then you look at poor old Peter Garrett, who's
lost a lot of credibility,
yeah,
unfortunately.
No, he was actually much better on the stage than he is in the parliament, I'm afraid.
Oh, can we sidetrack for a minute? Tell you there's one politician that's pissed us off a lot. It's Penny Wong.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree. I agree. I think she, again, is in the Peter Garrett camp.
She made a point, I think, that she's in a same-sex relationship, da-da-da-da-da, and now she's in national politics. She's suddenly, no, I don't want to talk about it. She's been invited on this station on 3JRY a number of times and has refused.
Really?
Not even enter into negotiations. She doesn't want to come there. So it sends a very negative message to the community, again, lesbian community, who make up probably about 7 to 10% of the voting public. They all have brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers.
Exactly.
So you've got about 30% of the voting public.
That's right.
We'll see that as a very negative thing.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it just seems if people like Penny Wong can't champion the cause, how the hell do we expect people like Kevin Rudd to?
Exactly. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo. Our special guest is Fiona Patten from the Australian Sex Party. We've been talking about the candidates standing in the upcoming federal election. Are you a Melbourne girl, Fiona Patten?
No.
Where are you from?
At the moment, I spend a third of my time in Melbourne, third in Sydney and a third in Canberra. Right. But I was born in Canberra.
Okay.
Ooh, that's more embarrassing than saying that I was an ex-sex worker, really.
It sounds as though the sex party's fairly big business then.
Yeah, we are. I mean, we're very serious. As we say, we're serious about sex. But we do think that we have got a chance. And I certainly think in Bradfield and Higgins, we do have a chance of being in the top three. And we're very hopeful of picking up at least one Senate seat in the next federal election.
Have you done deals on your preferences for these by-elections?
No, not really. I think in these by-elections, I didn't imagine that preferences were going to be all that important at the end of the day.
Okay, we're going to talk about some of the policies that you have here. There's a few of them are very interesting, and there's a couple of them actually really quite surprised me. Yeah. Let's talk about censorship, your policies about censorship, Fiona Patten. You want to bring about the establishment of a national classification scheme which includes uniform non-violent erotica rating for explicit adult material for all jurisdictions through all the media, including internet and computer games. So in a nutshell, what do you want?
Look, in most, a lot of your listeners may not be aware, but it's actually illegal to sell X-rated films in all jurisdictions of Australia, with the exception of the Northern Territory and Canberra. Of course, pretty much every adult shop around Australia.
I can walk out this front door in 10 minutes and go and buy hardcore.
Look,
if I wanted to.
I entered into this incredibly bizarre conversation with the police association some years ago, trying to convince them that X was illegal. And as I then started listening to myself saying, why are you trying to convince the police that X is illegal? If they think it's legal, just shut up, Fiona. But, it's illegal in every state, which is insane. So, as we say, you can show a film of someone having their breast chopped off, but you can't show a film of someone having it sucked. And we think this sends an extremely bad negative message about sex. So we would like to see that changed. And I think, it's the 21st century. I don't think we need state censorship laws. National.
Unfortunately, sex, you mentioned sex in Parliament and everybody goes all of a dither.
They do. They start giggling they probably start thinking about it, I suppose. But, and the fact we don't have R-rated computer games. Why would we say we can have R-rated films but not R-rated computer games? The majority of Australians who play computer games are adults. Let them, if they want to play an adult game, let them play an adult game, for goodness sake. So I think we do need a real overturn. And at the moment, under this mandatory filter, any website that is sexually explicit will be blocked.
It's funny, that's gone very quiet, though, lately, because there have been all sorts of objections to it and practical problems involving bringing it into fruition. But
it is not dead,
Peter. They
don't
talk about it.
No, of course they don't, because there's a vocal group who are opposed to it, but they believe that Middle Australia won't care.
So is this being proposed by the DBDCE? The Department of Broadband Communications and Digital Economy.
Yes,
he loves this.
which, just as a little aside on that, the Australian Sex Party's website is blocked in that department.
Oh, really?
Because of their filter. Now, we have nothing explicit, but we do have sex in our name, and they've blocked our site. Yes, this has been proposed by then, but do you know who the author was? Clive Hamilton.
Oh, really?
The Greens candidate. He proposed this some years ago, and the government have run with it. They've got the numbers. The Libs won't oppose it. And I think, you know, and you've got Senator Conroy and you've got Archbishop Pell in there walking the corridors saying, put this through if you want our vote at the next election.
Hmm. You know, one of the things that disturbs me about the internet is so easy to stumble across some of the most awfully graphic, violent, hideous pictures. I came across accidentally when I was looking for something. I came across a picture that just absolutely horrified me, and it was of a person who'd been executed, and it was just done in the most horrendous. There was a pole going through the mouth and through the whole body, and it was just right. Now you imagine seeing that, and that was on my screen. I thought, oh my goodness gracious!
You know, and that wouldn't be blocked on the filter.
It wasn't.
No, that wouldn't, and it would only be if that was an erect penis that would have it caused to be blocked. I mean, violence and violent imagery is not under the proposed mandatory filter.
Okay, let's talk about education. Now, you've got a bit of a thing here that goes through quite a lot about sexual abuse of children. It comes up a few times.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit why you're so, the Australian Sex Party is so hung up on this.
Okay, look, I mean, some of that is a bit personal, that every time, you know, we put our heads up about censorship, or we put our heads up about opening an adult shop or something like that, we get accused of causing child sexual abuse. Now, you only have to look at the evidence to see where child sexual abuse has occurred in our community, and it's within religious institutions. I think Broken Rights estimates there's about 30,000 victims of sexual abuse or violence from those institutions, and it's not being addressed. I mean, in Ireland, we had a royal commission into it, but in Australia, we are saying, well, just let the church deal with that. If any other organisation had already 600 convicted child sex abusers, do you think the government wouldn't intervene? I mean, if that had been the sex industry, or if it had been the radio industry, you know, we'd say, you know, this is a massive problem. But because it's the church, we kind of just go, la, 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 we'll let them deal with it and wipe it under and push it under the carpet.
They are, in some ways, I think, sounds to me as though they're trying to deal with it. Didn't the Pope send an email of apology? I mean, that meant a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, but I think, you know, it was weird. Like, I mean, I hate to tell this story, but it's because it's really offensive. But Jim Wallace, the Brigadier Jim Wallace, who's head of the Christian lobby, I was at a recent debate with him.
And the Australian Family Association.
The Australian Family
Association,
yeah. And we raised this issue with him, you know, that he was talking about blocking to protect children. He wanted to mandatory filter the internet. But what was his response to the 600 convictions of people from the church of child sexual abuse? He said, well, I'm glad you asked that question, because you know what the problem is? They were gay. And we said, what? He said, yes, they snuck in, because we don't let gays into the church, and they snuck in, so it was their fault, because they snuck in and then they abused. And we just, you know, the whole audience, even his supporters in the audience, were just horrified that he would come up with such an excuse or such a, you know, a response to what I think is actually a very serious issue.
Fiona Patton, I have to say, we're sort of used to it.
Ugh.
Gay men, we've had that dumped on us all most of our lives, and we get blamed for anything to do like that. Oh. Even the ex-premier of Victoria.
Oh, that's right.
Jeff
that
Kennett.
That recent case of the masseuse.
Yes, he was. Yeah. He says, you know, well, yes, all gay people are child molesters, sort of thing.
Oh.
So it's not anything that we haven't heard 1,000 times before. But okay, so I see where you're coming from. That. Now, you want to bring about the development of a national sex education curricula as a first step in preventing sexualization of children. Okay, let's talk about this, because this is one of the things I really hate, is the way children are being sexualized. I'm a primary school teacher in real life.
Yep.
Okay, and I see children used in advertising and in media, and you see these little kids, and they're used and they sexualize them to try and sell consumer products. Is this what you're on about?
It is, and I think it's also about... It's also about teaching kids that, you know, as a primary school teacher, you know the sort of the amount of media that our kids are seeing that you know, that we were never seeing in at that age. I mean, the internet, the televisions, the mass media that kids are bombarded with, and we need to prepare them for that. You know, I don't want kids getting their sex education on penthouse.com. I want our kids getting good sex education from the minute they go to school. And I think it's very confronting for some schools that they need to be talking very frankly and not just about the biology. It needs to be about relationships. It needs to be about negotiation. And I think we haven't seen a decline in sexual violence in our community for nearly a quarter of a century. And I really think that we need to, that education and is the key. And it's about negotiating relationships, about recognising them. And that will be the key to probably also addressing the fact that kids are being sexualised. But I think I'm more concerned about the information that they're being bombarded with and not having the wherewithal to deal with it.
And the destigmatisation of minority groups as well.
That's right, exactly. You know, it would. I think that would reduce violence in our community enormously, as well as reduce STIs. And I mean, it just seems extraordinary. Again, in 21st century, we're starting to see an increase in STIs in that young groups. You think, well, whatever we're teaching them is not working. And I suspect we might be teaching them about STIs, but we're not teaching them how to negotiate safe sex properly.
Fiona Patton, you might have a point. We'd like to thank the Community Broadcasting Foundation for funding Allegro Non Troppo on the Community Radio Network. Our special guest on Allegro Non Troppo today is Fiona Patton from the Sex Party. We've been talking to her about the policies, about the by-elections that are coming up with the Sex Party, and we just thought we'd have a little bit of a little more chit-chat about some of the policies. One of the things you want to do in regard to health, Fiona Patton, is an act of new national pregnancy termination law along the same lines as divorce law, which allow for legal, no-fault, guilt-free processes for women seeking termination.
Yep. Look, I think Victoria has been very progressive in introducing legislation, as has West Australia, in, you know, absolutely legalising abortion. But in every other state, there is some level of criminalisation to it. And I think this is a national issue, and it is, you know, with things like RU486, we need to be taking a national approach to termination. It's, you know, it's on Medicare, so it should be a national approach, and I don't think that we should have this hit and miss that women in Queensland, you know, have difficulty seeking an abortion. Women in New South Wales can only get an abortion if a doctor approves it and says it will be detrimental to their health to continue with the pregnancy. So women do not have the choice. It's left to their doctors.
It's awful.
It's awful. Archaic.
Abortion generally is awful. Mm. I did a special show with Senator Lynn Allison and Leslie Cannold on abortion.
Yeah.
And during the research for that, I was very pro-choice until I started doing the research. And I got into this situation where I find around about 20 or so weeks before they can actually abort, they have to kill the fetus. That just really upset me.
Yeah, I mean, that late term termination
is awful. And my heart goes out to women who find themselves in that situation. Absolutely. It's a horrible choice to have to make. But if you make it, you want to be able to have
that's
to make
right.
that
and
choice.
And I think, I mean, and with greater sex education, probably we can reduce the level of abortion. But, you know, criminalising it does not reduce the level. In fact, it just unfortunately puts women at greater risk.
Fiona Patton, you want to have Viagra and Cialis listed under the pharmaceutical benefits scheme so that men can maintain their erections longer.
That's right.
Why?
I think that sex is an absolute basic part of our lives. It is an important part of our lives. It's an important part of our relationships. And sexual dysfunction is treated as some sort of, you know, kind of illness that isn't really an illness.
There's no personal desire in this, is there? Have you got a partner?
I hope he's not listening. I'm sure he is.
Caught you.
No, it's actually, I think it's really when speaking to some of, you know, a lot of the men's health groups that sex is a really important part of our esteem. It's a part of our makeup. And if men can no longer have a sex dysfunction that something like Viagra or Cialis can help with, then it should be on the PBS, and it should be considered the same. If you had an eating disorder, or you were dysfunctional breathing, you know, there's no question that you would get government funding for it. But because you aren't able to have sex, that's seen as some sort of luxury, and I think that's wrong. I think sex should be considered as an important part of our lives.
It can be used, abused as well, because I know, just through my my association with some people that I know who do other drugs, that they use. They use the Cialis and the Viagra because they have a problem because they're doing other drugs at the same time.
I'm not talking about that. Okay. I'm talking about people who have a sexual dysfunction and actually have trouble having sex.
Okay, let's try and put this. We're coming up to the end of the show. I wanted to put a few things into perspective. We were talking in the first hour of our show, which doesn't go onto the network, about the number of sexual partners homosexual men seem to have. Because the most active homosexual men, not all, but quite a lot of them, have a lot. I know I certainly do. And we're saying this is one of the things that they use as a judgmental thing against us. They say we're promiscuous. What's your position on this? I know you're going to say that's fine, but...
Yeah, I love sex. And I think, you know, as long as it's consenting, you can do it with whoever, whenever you want.
As
frequently as you want. And all power to you if you can, if you have such great recovery skills. But I think it's an interesting thing with the sex party that, you know, sex is a really important part of, you know, particularly, I guess, the gay community. That it is a very important part of identity.
Well, this station is, we come together, the common denominator on this community radio station we're on at the moment, 3JOY, is we're here because of our sexuality.
That's right.
And that sexuality, there's a three-letter word, S-E-X.
That's right.
And that defines a lot of who we are.
Yeah.
And that's just...
And I mean, not just for gay, you know, not just for, you know, gay lesbians. I mean, I think your sex and sexuality does actually define who you are for everyone.
Okay.
And I think we try and ignore that, but it is an important part of our makeup.
Fiona Patton, this has been an interesting look at the Australian Sex Party and you. I'd like to take this opportunity for you as the convener of the Australian Sex Party, coming up to the by-elections and also coming up over the next year. Could you give a message to the community from the Sex Party, please?
Yeah, thank you. Unaccustomed as I am, certainly in Higgins and Bradfield, we are in the top three, I believe. Now we may not get elected in these elections, but I think a vote for the Sex Party sends a very clear message to the major parties and to the government that the issues that we are standing up for are important to the community and that people will vote on those issues. So while it may not get us elected in those two by-elections, it sends an important message. And then I hope come the federal election, we will win a seat in the Senate so we can raise these issues and not be afraid to say that word sex in the federal parliament.
It's going to be an uphill battle because the very fact that you've called yourselves the Australian Sex Party, while everybody knows who you are and you're probably very well known, it's going to be difficult for a lot of people to take it really seriously. Yeah. So you're going to have a real publicity thing to have to do.
There's also the other side of that, that there is such a large part of our community that is so disengaged with politics, that is so disaffected. But so when they walk into that polling booth, they'll go, oh, well, that looks good.
Okay. Well, let's hope that people vote below the line when they come to that election because it'll be... I don't know.
We'll be above the line in the Senate.
Will you?
Yep. They'll just have to tick one in our box.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward to hearing the results of the Higgins and the Bradfield by-elections next week to see how you go. Peter and I won't be here for the next
That's
few
right,
weeks.
That's right. We won't, will we?
Allegro will be presented by other presenters over our summer season. I'd just like to say a very special thank you to the people who will be presenting Allegro. Thank you to all of our guests, like Fiona Patton, for being on Allegro this year. And thank you to the Community Radio Network and to the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We'll be back in the autumn season of Allegro. In the meantime, Peter, have a nice Christmas.
And you too, Adam.
And everybody, please enjoy Allegro over the summer season. Bye.
Bye.